Okay, so you finished the sheet pretty quickly today. It wasn't such a long sheet, but we have a shorter shear. We have to be out of here in about 45 minutes. So let's go through this pretty quickly and see how we understand it. We at 12:20, we're doing Hataras Nedarim, and therefore we have to be out of here before then. Now, if you remember from last time, let's just recap, because this is essential, and we're moving through this quite quickly, because I don't want to dwell on stuff that's not difficult and you can understand. If you remember girls, and last time we didn't quite finish, but let's maybe recap a couple of things. The Rambam said that there were five categories of halakha, and every single halakha in the entire Jewish religion can be fitted into one of these five categories. Just someone go through and remind me what the five were.
Explanations received from Moshe.
Okay, explanations of psukim, let's say psukim. You don't have to write this down again, it's the same as last time. From Moshe. Okay, what was the second one? Halacha la Moshe Mitzinai. Okay. The third one was? Droshas. Okay, halacha is like new halacha, let's call it new halacha. New halacha. The fourth one was?
Gezeiros.
Okay, and? Ta. Can you read your own writing? Takanot. Okay. The difference, we went quite quickly through gezeiros and takanas, but again, the difference between a gezeira and a takana, we'll look at them more in depth in the sheet as we go through. A gezeira is a usually negative in nature, prohibition, but not always. A gezeira comes to protect something in the Torah. The rabbis had a mandate to create protective fences. Not everything they do is a fence. Some things are, some things aren't. They are gezeiras. Usually they're negative, but often they're positive. We gave lots of examples last time, whether it's not writing with your weak hand on Shabbos when the Doraisa is only with your strong hand, whatever it is. And takanas are new institutions that the rabbis bring in order to strengthen Jewish life. Whether it's tefillah, brachas, whether it's ksuba, whether it's the festival of Hanukkah, all sorts of things like that. Sometimes they can be negative in nature. An example which we didn't do, with which I'll just raise for you, Chazal made a takana that a woman is not allowed to marry within 2 years of having a baby. Let's say the woman has a baby and her first husband dies, God forbid, or she gets divorced. She's not allowed to remarry, said Chazal. We'll have to see what the halacha is today. It's a different question. Chazal, she's not allowed to marry within 2 years of having that baby. Why? What were they concerned about? This is not a gezeira in case something happens. It's a takana that they introduced to make something happen. Yes?
She'll have
time to give her
child.
Ah, good. Why not?
Because she has a new husband.
And what might happen?
So the child won't grow up without attention.
It's not just attention. You're right, Oriya. It is attention, but it's more specific than just attention. Yeah. Yes, Jessica.
It's a little bit because she has a new husband and she gets pregnant, she won't be able
right. to... Right. She's feeding the baby. The baby needs milk. The baby has no other source of milk, because where else are you going to get a source of milk? You have to pay for a wet nurse. That's the only way they could feed a baby if they weren't producing milk. If the new wife gets pregnant, which she can do even though she's feeding, some women think that you can't get pregnant when you're feeding. Well, you can, okay? She has a baby. The milk dries out. So the stepfather is not going to be that interested in paying to look after someone else's child. Chazal will worry that the child wouldn't be treated properly, get the attention, get the food, etc. So they say, wait till the child's on solids, and then move on from there. Now, the Shaila is, of course, today. Does that still apply? Now you can go to the baby, is storing your baby formula. People.
If there was a problem and someone went over to him and asked him, am I allowed to get remarried? Am I allowed to get remarried? Whatever, and he said, since there was no problem with the husband and child support,
okay, so we'll see. I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but I'm saying that's just an example of a takana that was made then. As a takana, you see why it's a takana, not a gezeira. It's there to try and improve Jewish life, family life, society, etc. Now, let's move focus on number one. Number one is what we're looking at today, which is when Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah Shebit Tav, he received explanations of those psukim. And the Rambam, these are clearly Doraisa. By the way, in terms of Doraisa Drabonon, number one clearly is Doraisa. Number three clearly is Drabonon. Number two, I think I even raised at the very beginning, is we'll have to decide what that is. Because on the one hand, it's Doraisa, it's coming from the Psukim. On the other hand, it's coming from the rabbis. So there's an element of the rabbis in it. We'll have to talk about that. The other thing that I was talking to Ilana about at the end of the shir, which I think it was Ilana I was talking about, which and I thought of something which might help understand the difference between 2 and 3. In number 2, what the rabbis are really doing are revealing, and this links in with what we're saying today, they're revealing what's there. They're revealing what the text means. Whereas in number 3, in column 3, in number 4 and 5, they're really creating completely new things. They may connect them with the text, which we'll see at the Ritzvah at the end today. They may connect them with the text, but they're not coming out of the text. 3 is coming out of the text. Now, let's look at number 1. Says the Rambam, let's do this quite quickly because it's really not that complicated. Da says the Rambam. Ki kol mitzvah shenasa kodesh baruch hu, lemoshe rabbeinu nitna loy im peirusha. He gave it with a peirush, meaning Moshe didn't just come down from the mountain with no understanding of what the mitzvahs meant. Hay Hashem oimer loy mikra, he was given the posuk, which we learned like orally, he would give him the verse. V'achakach oimer loy peirusha, but then he would give him an explanation, the inyana and the details, u'mashikolo zeh mikra b'chuk. And what everything that the posuk would contain. And now he gives examples. And I like number 2 because it's some preparation for sukkahs. Because he uses sukkah as a prime example. Look at number 2. Start at the end of the line. V'amru aleihem ha-shalom. The rabbi said, aleihem ha-shalom. He uses the word aleihem ha-shalom often when he's talking about the rabbis. B'braisa, he's bringing a braisa. V'yidabei Hashem is el Moshe b'har Sinai. Ma talmud loimar b'har Sinai. We saw this source, remember? It's from the beginning of Bahar, where it says already in Bahar, which is way after Har Sinai. It's already in at the end of Vayikra. It says, why is he talking about Har Sinai in Bahar? Okay? It says, just like Matabullah Har Sinai, Bahaloi Kala Tarukola Nemra Sinai. Wasn't the whole Torah given at Sinai? Why are we talking in Shemitah? This ties in very nicely. Why are we talking with Shemitah that it was given on Har Sinai? El Eloi Melechai tells us, Mashmita Nemru Klalo Tehu Pratu Tehu Dikdu Keha Sinai. Just like Shemitah was given on Har Sinai in all its glorious technicolor. Remember, it's mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim, briefly, but it's elaborated on in detail in Parshas Bahar, just like this one was given over there. Afkol mitzvahs nemru kalosehim v'ratotehim v'diktukehim misinai. Fine. Whose opinion was this? We saw a machlokas. This was Rebbe, which if you remember from source from sheet number 1 and 2. We saw a machlokas whether just the klalim were given on Sinai, but the pratim were given later, or all the klalim and all the pratim and all the diktukim were given on Sinai. Who was that machlokas? Rabbi what? Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shmuel. Who said which? Who said this? Adele, you just said that?
Everything was given at Sinai with Rabbi Kiva.
Right, so the Rambam is going in the sheet of Rabbi Kiva, which we saw also the Maharal. This seems to be the sheet, and Rashi follows. Fine. Second paragraph, number 2. Lamasha, give you an example. Amalach, Oimalach, I want to say to you like this. Hashem Amalach, God says to Moshe, Besukos Teshvu Shivas Yamin, live in a sukkah for 7 days. But then he also tells him, that the sukkah is for men and not for women. In other words, the exemption, he says, of women sitting in a sukkah is halachala, given to Moshe on Sinai already. Not worked out later. By the way, it's interesting, there's a discussion in the Gemara, why isn't women's exemption from sukkah a standard mitzvah afishir mangrama? It's a standard positive time-bound mitzvah, which is learned out later in number 3. That does come as a drosha. Why is sukkah different? There's a whole discussion there. And it says, because how can you split up a male, a man and a woman? How can a man have an obligation to sleep in a sukkah separate from his wife? What kind of family connection is that? What kind of family unity is that? Therefore, how can you just ordinarily exempt women from a sukkah? That impacts very much on the man's ability to sleep in the sukkah. So it comes down as the halacha l'moshe misina. There's a lot to be said there. Maybe on the Yom HaYun we'll talk more about that kind of thing. Ve'ena cholim chayavim ba'adat cholim are not chayavim in the sukkah because they're sick, okay? Which is not normal. Normally cholim are chayavim mitzvahs. If you're a chol, you still have to eat matzah. If you're a chol, you still have to keep Shabbos, but you're exempt from the sukkah. Okay, why, by the way? Why?
It's going to bring
suffering, then it's not. Right, why if you suffer, is that an exemption from sukkah? It's not an exemption from a normal mitzvah.
Well,
who said you have to enjoy it?
Well, it says mitzvah.
mitzvah of simcha. Simcha is a separate mitzvah. There's mitzvah of simcha on Pesach as well. Mitzvah of simcha in general.
When you do it, so you have to be happy when you do it.
You don't have to be happy. It's nice to be happy. It's good to be happy. But you can do mitzvahs. Even if you're not happy, you still have to do it. You say, I'm not happy. You know, I'm hungry. I don't want to fast on Yom Kippur. I'm sorry. Can I tell you? Yeah? There's a special thing with sukkah. What is it? Yes, and so what? That doesn't normally exempt you from a mitzvah d'oraisa. So it's because the idea of teshvu ke'en taduru, besukkos teshvu, sitting in the sukkah means living in the normal way that you'd live in a normal house. A chole wouldn't sit in a cold, drafty room. That's not considered normal living. They're exempt from that kind of living. It goes on to say, v'lo yeschacha ele b'tzomech min ha'aretz, that the schach has to grow from the ground. You know that about schach. All this came at the beginning. The loy sukach, loy betzemer, don't use wool. The loy bemeshi, what's meshi? Silk, you can't use wool and silk. The loy bekelim, you can't use kelim, whether it's clothes or whatever it is. Afilu imashet somech menaret, even if they did grow from the ground, if you're using cotton or if you're using wool, whatever, that's all, wool didn't grow from the ground, but whatever. This all came at the beginning. Kebachatz alois, v'agadim, like mats or clothes. V'ha'achil, v'ha'ashtir, v'ha'ashena, yiyubah, koshiv, v'ashimim. You have to eat and drink and sleep in the sukkah. All of this goes to Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo yeh b'chala l'pachos mishiv v'tzifachim, orechav tzifachim roichav. You have to have it 7x7. That's the minimum size. Lo yeh b'gvar pachos me'asara. You have to have it at least 10 tzifachim high. U'kasheh b'ha'shaliach. And when the shaliach came, who's the shaliach? Moshe. Why are their phones out? Making notes on your phone? Are you looking at your calendar because you're still worrying about Pesach? Put your phone away. Okay? Kasher b'ha shaliach, when the shaliach came, by the way, can you make it a bit cooler in here? It's hot. Just take it on 23, please, Abby. Alav ha-shalom, nitna lo zoyt ha-mitzvah u-perusha. He gave him the mitzvah. What's going on? Thank you. He gave him the mitzvah and the perush. Kach sheish meyer shloishes reha mitzvah. Similarly, all 630 mitzvahs. Hein perusham amikras ksuvim megillos haperush nimsalpe. He was given them. The psukim were written down. Interestingly, he says in megillos. It sounds like he's going like which shita in the writing of the Sefer Torah there. It was given scroll by scroll. It's interesting because elsewhere he seems to say otherwise, but that's not for today. And the Perush was given Balpeh. Fine. So, lest you come to say in the Rambam, look, the Rambam holds by category number 3. This is a big machloikas. There are other Rishonim that don't hold by number 3. They say everything was given at Sinai. And you're going to tell me, but the Rambam holds that lots of things came after. True. But lots of the Perushim came at the beginning as well. The Psukim themselves didn't come in a vacuum, they came together with a ready-made user guide. Clear? This seems to be, this is not complicated, this is very clear. Ilana?
So, the Rambam, there was exception for other meanings?
Yes, there are other shitas that we haven't seen yet that deny this third column. The Rambam gets very upset with them. But we'll see that more later. But so far we're sticking to the Rambam.
Does he also believe in the other ones as well?
Yeah, everybody accepts 4, 5, 1 and 2. The question is with 3. What's with 3? Okay, but even the Rambam, who has this idea of an evolving, developing, halachic process, even in Doraisas, he still holds for sure that a lot of stuff was given at the beginning. Yes, Michal?
Why is it that, if you look at things like, say, the Shulchan Aruch and Shabbos and stuff like that, why is it that these things, like, just so much easier on the Torah, but then other things are...
You mean in the psukim themselves?
Yeah.
That's a good question. The psukim, sometimes the psukim go into vast details about certain mitzvahs, korbanos, tumah and tahara. You have entire chapters of the chumash dedicated to all the details. And other mitzvahs are what are called harim tluyim besarot. They are like mountains hung on threads. Meaning there's almost nothing there. There's just like, it says keep Shabbos, but it doesn't give any of the details.
So like if you said, like, oh, well, it's given the oral Torah, then why does Sukkot need to be written down? Why can
Well, in fairness, he doesn't write Sukkot in that much detail. It says, Besukkot Teshvu Shivas Yamim. It just says you have to live in a Sukkah for 7 days. Well, the Rambam's saying is the definition of Sukkah, the definition of live, these are all oral.
Why
is it that other things are written in great detail? So that's a broader question which I'm not going to deal with now. As a broader question, why is it that the Chumash sometimes doesn't say what it means? Why is there a pshat which is different from a drash? What is the purpose of pshats, if not to teach us the exact halacha? We'll deal with that in detail. We will deal with that, because I'm going to look at pshat and drash independently. Let's go on to the over the page, and let's have a little look here. The top paragraph I don't want to dwell on in detail. The top paragraph, he basically just says that there's no machlokas. I think we got that already. Let's pick it up. First of all, let's start from the beginning. In Perushi Atteru Kemoshi Asadim Kubalim Moshe. If the Perushim were received from Moshe, Kemoshi Amarnu. Okay, Ma'amram, from what they said, Kol Atteru Nemusha Atteru Prato Diku Kemisinai. Mahe Moisen Halachas Ayuchidos Asher Yom Rebahem Shem Halacha Lemoshe Misinai. Why then is there a separate category of halachas that we call Halacha Lemoshe Misinai? Both 1 and 2 were given at Sinai. Why do we have a separate category of halacha for number 2? So he says like this. You have to understand this. Get this clear, he says. So there is never any machlokas, b'shum panim, in any way at all, in category number 2. We never find in the whole Talmud any rabbis disagreeing. Bizman min hazmanim, at any time in Jewish history, mimoshe ad Rav Ashi, from Moshe to Rav Ashi, what's the relevance of Rav Ashi? What did he do? He put together the Gemara. The whole period, while oral Torah was oral, by the time of Rav Ashi, it was already not oral anymore. It was in the Talmud. We don't find she'ama echad behen shemisha sime ein adam tisameh, or tisameh. We don't find when it says ayin ba'ayin or ayin tachas ayin. What does ayin tachas ayin mean? An eye for an eye. So if somebody, God forbid, pokes out someone's eye, so he gets his eye poked out back. Is that right? No. We don't find anyone who said that. We don't say to Samei no lamama Hashem when it says in the pasuk ayin ba ayin. So one says, yeah, poke the other guy's eye out. Va'amar acher, and then another rabbi said shidamim bilvad hu chayev. No, he's only liable money. No, on the contrary, everybody always says the Rambam, that he's only liable to pay money. No one ever argued that there really is such a thing as the lex talionis. I think it's called talionis. The idea that you have to do to the other person what they did to you. That's not what it means. Ah, so Michal's asking, so if that's not what it means, why does it say that? She's not exactly asking that, but I'm putting it in her mouth. So if it means pay money if somebody damages, why doesn't it just say that? There are words in Hebrew. Why does it say poke the other guy's eye out? So we need to work out. Why is the Chumash telling us in that way?
Which is two? Or which is
sort of category? No, this is number one. Ayin ba'ayin, he says, means stamming.
To figure out the eye is still one?
What do you mean to figure out the eye? I don't know what you're asking, that's all.
It says ayin ba'ayin. That's one.
Ayin ba'ayin is all part of one, because it's an apostate. I want to know what ayin ba'ayin means. It means pay money if somebody pokes out someone's eye.
And figuring out what it means
is
one or two.
No, we're not talking about two. Two is stuff that's not connected with the pasuk at all.
Okay.
It's all number one. Okay? It gives another example. Pre-Eitz Hadar. We're going to see this in a minute. Pre-Eitz Hadar. And I'm going to compare this with some sources that you saw at the end. What is this pre-Eitz Hadar? Literally, what does pre-Eitz Hadar mean? Literally.
The fruit.
Of a citrus tree. What does Hadar mean? Beautiful. The fruit of a beautiful tree. Or what else could it mean?
A beautiful fruit.
The beautiful fruit of a tree. It's not clear what Hadar is qualifying. Is it the pre or the eighth? But it's written pre-eighth Hadar. The fruit of a beautiful tree. Acha Amar Echad. Maybe one person said Kihu Esrog. That's an Esrog. The Amar Acher. Maybe another person said Haparish. Maybe it's an apple. Some kind of a parish, like a quince or something like that. Did you look it up? Did anyone look what a parish was? I'm not sure what a parish is. It's like it's some kind of fruit, like an apple or something like that. Or rimon. That I know what that is. What's a rimon?
Pomegranate.
One of my friends just had a baby called him Rimon. Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah? Or zuladze. Or something else. In other words, it says the fruit of a beautiful tree. Well, you might like bananas. She might like kumquats. And he might like who knows what. No one ever argued that you can shake a banana in the air on Sukkot. No one ever argued about that. It wasn't the machlokes in number 3 that, you know, I think Hadar means this, I think Hadar means this. No, it was halacha given to Moshe at Sinai. Why not sound of gamke machlokes be'etz avos? What does it mean, the twisted branches? Everybody agrees. Shehu hadas. Everyone agrees it's a hadas, it's a myrtle. But why not sound of machlokes be'amris aleh uketsoisa es kapa? You shall cut off her hand. Who's this talking about? What did you think when you read it?
Who's having a handkerchief? You know about a handkerchief. It says in the pasuk, "Katsoisa eskapa." You'll cut off her hand. Whose hand do you cut off?
The
Cohen's daughter's coming up.
Two men are in a fight, and the wife comes in and breaks it up in an inappropriate manner. So
that's so nicely put, Joy. She breaks it up in an inappropriate manner. You know what she's talking about?
No.
It says in the pasuk, if the wife comes in, her husband's in a fight with another guy, and she, to protect the husband, she grabs the guy who's fighting her husband by his private parts very hard. Okay? No, you're not allowed to do that, correct. No, you're not. She say, it says in the pasuk, if this is the method that she uses to save her husband, that's highly embarrassing to the other guy. It says, ukatosa es kapa, you have to chop off her hand. Says the Rambam, does
what
anybody...
Wait, what type of fighting, like, are you doing?
Like, no, physical.
I got it.
Anyway, I'm not getting into a debate about the specific halacha. The point is, it says that you cut off a hand, but the Rambam says nobody ever in the history of halacha suggested that it, God forbid, meant that. It doesn't mean that. Shudamim, it means money. She has to pay compensation. She acted in a way which is publicly humiliating. Okay, the guy was fighting her husband, but she's no right to do that. She has to pay compensation. But it says you have to cut off her hand. That's not what it means. So again, so, well, if that's not what it means, why does it say that?
What if she was...
What?
Why would it write it like that?
That's a good question. We need to deal with that, and I'm not dealing with that today. This is always a question. Why doesn't it write don't eat meat and milk together? Why does it write don't cook a kid in its mother's milk? It doesn't say don't eat meat and milk. It says don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. So it means don't cook a kid in its mother's milk, but I can eat meat and milk together. So why does it say that way? So that's a separate question which we're not going to deal with today. But keep it in mind, because it should bother you. Doesn't it bother you?
No, I learned it 2 years in a row. Gosh, I can just recite it by heart.
And the answer?
Yeah, all of it. Every guy.
Well, you hold that thought on hold, and we'll see when we get to it if your answer is the answer I give, or part of the answer, or the whole answer, or a completely different answer.
Excited.
He gives other examples. He says a bas is Cohen, if a daughter of a Cohen does a znus, that you take her out and you burn her. So he says it doesn't mean the daughter of a Cohen. It means the married daughter who commits adultery. Abba doesn't say that. And he gives lots of examples like that. No one ever argued about these. Everyone always agreed what they meant. Okay, let's just go to the very end here. That applies in all the mitzvahs. Three lines up from the bottom of the top box, ein machlokes bo. No machlokes. The fishahem kula perushim mikubalim imoshe. They all came to Moshe on Sinai. Va'aleihim va'aldomehim amru kolat tera nemru kalaseo pratosavisi. Like Rabbi Akiva. Now again, the Rambam is going to have an entire category of halacha which came later, which was developed later, which the rabbis interpreted later. But he says, don't forget about number one. It's very important. Now, given that this stuff was known on Sinai, and the example he gives was Sukkah and Esrog, have a look, before you look at the last Rambam, look at these Gemaras in page number 3. Really interesting Gemaras. Comes along the Gemara in source number 5, and says the following. Tan Rabban, the rabbis taught, pre-8 Hadar. Now I have to sound Ashkenazi when I say this, because otherwise you won't be able to hear it. Pre-8 Hadar. Okay, with two kamatsim. Two oz under the hadar. Eight shita'am eitzoi upiryo shava. So the first explanation that the Gemara gives is, it means a fruit which the taste of the tree bark and the taste of the fruit is the same. That's why it says the fruit of a beautiful tree. It's the tree that has to be beautiful to have it. Only that's an esro. Fine, very nice. It means, in theory, the bark of the esrog also tastes of the fruit. In other words, if you chew apple bark, it doesn't taste of apples. I've never tried any of this, guys. If you want to go home and experiment, and you can, just don't tell your parents that I suggested it, okay? If you chew apple bark, it doesn't taste of apples, but if you chew esrog bark, it tastes of esrog. Okay, that's why it says the tree, that's how we know it's an esrog. Okay. Rabbi Abau says, Al tikre hadar, don't read hadar, ela hadar. The fruit that lives from the word dar, what's a dira? An apartment. The fruit that lives on the tree, davar shedar ve'ilano mishana l'shana. Something that lives on the tree from year to year. What normally happens to fruits at the end of the season?
They
It falls off the tree. That's the way that fruit works. What happens to an esrog? It sits there. It doesn't go anywhere. If you have an esrog tree in normal conditions, the fruit just grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. It lives on the tree from year to year. That's why it says ha-dor. It lives on the tree. Okay. That means an esrog can be this big. You can find esrog in this big. The Mishnah says an esrog has to be, you have to be able to hold it in two hands for it to be kosher. And if you look, the Yemenites, the Tamanim, often have these big, beautiful, big esrogim, beautiful, big lulavim. They come into shul, and the lulav is like four times bigger than the guy, you know? And the esrog. So, that, now, one second. How do I know that an esrog has to be an esrog on Sukkot? Where do I know that from? Tell me.
From Moshe.
From Moshe. So, what's going on in this Gemara? How do I know it? Because it's hadar, hadar. It lives on the tree. Look at the next one. Ben Azai says, Al tikre hadar ela idur. Hidur. Shekein b'loshen yavani, because in Greek, korin lamayim, what do we call water? Hidur. 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 Hydroelectric, hydroponic, hydrostatic, hydrolysis. Greek, the word for water in Greek is hydro. And I brought you the Greek word there, so you can read it. The Azohisha God, I call mine, what is the tree that needs the most water? Have you heard it, Ezra? Now, one second. I wanted to work out what on earth is going on here. Sometimes when Chazal bring things out of Psukim, sometimes they feel a little bit, how would you put it? Far-fetched, or extreme, or what? Yeah, why, are you telling me that the Pasuk is teaching me Greek? Greek as a language didn't exist at the time of the Torah. Greek was only invented 500, 700 years later. Are you telling me that I'm learning out from the Pasuk that in order for an esrog to be kosher, it has to be from the Greek word hydro? Is that where I'm learning it from?
No.
Where am I learning it from? Where do I know it from? From Sinai. So what am I doing this for? I'm trying to connect it to the Pasuk somehow, but I'm not learning it from the Pasuk. What is this called? This is called an asmachta. And I want to introduce this to you because this is very important. And if you don't understand this right, sometimes you won't know what's going on when you read a Gemara and you think to yourself, this is a fairly unusual way to read this Pasuk. Think about this. I'm going to draw this in two colours. Where's my red pen gone? Here we are. This is a Pasuk, okay? Here's a Pasuk. Here's a Pasuk. And here is a halakha. What is the relationship between the pasuk and the halakha? So sometimes, guys, this is very important foundational stuff. Sometimes what I do is I read the pasuk, or Chazal do, not me, we don't do this, Chazal did this. They read the pasuk and they learn the halakha from the pasuk. That is called the drasha. It just uses things like the yud gimel midot. We'll talk about that in more detail. Meaning, I start with the Pasuk, and I learn the Halacha out. The Pasuk comes first, I apply the formulae to the Pasuk, and the Halacha comes out at the end of the machine. Yeah? Sometimes that's what's happening. Other times, it goes the other way around. I have the Halacha, I know the Halacha already, how would I know it? Either it's column number one, or column number two, usually column number one. I know it from Sinai, or I know it because the rabbis created it, Drabonon, four or five. Yeah? But I'd like to somehow connect it back to the Pasuk. But I'm not learning it from the Pasuk. That's called an asmachta. An asmachta from the word smach. What's smach mean? To lean on. It leans on the Pasuk. When the rabbis are learning an asmachta, they're not really learning the halach from the Pasuk. And therefore they don't really need to prove it in a logical way. So sometimes when you read a Pasuk, and you think that the rabbis are taking the words out of context, that's not what it means. So sometimes it's just because you don't know the rules of Drash, and they really are learning it from Drash, and you've just got to get to know how Drash works better. But sometimes what might be happening is this, and that they just need a hint, they need a connector. They don't need to actually learn it out. Does that make sense? Is this something that everybody knew before? It's very important. You have to know, which sometimes it's difficult to know. And when you're dealing with Drabonons, it's very important because you know, an asmachta will often be a drabonon, but a drosha will usually be a daraisa. So it's important to get that clear. Yes, Michal.
Is it the majority of this is a drosha or asmachta?
That's a good question. That's a good question, because asmachtas are usually in a drabonon, and droshas are usually with doraisas. The majority of, I mean, this is usually how everything's done together. I don't know exactly in terms of, the majority didn't come from Sinai, that's for sure. Okay? Usually what we're, in terms of our numbers of category, this is usually number 3, this is usually number 4 and number 5, but sometimes it's number 1. Okay? I didn't really answer your question.
In the case of
Estruk, it's unusual, because what we're doing is, where do we know the halacha from in the Etrog? Where do we know it from? We know it from Sinai. But we're still trying to find a connection with the pasuk. That's a rarity.
I guess what I'm trying to ask is, like, the majority of things today, are they coming because they're, like,
the majority of what we do
in the Torah, or is it because they had to look at the Torah and they find the halacha, or because they know the halacha?
Right. The majority of stuff that we do today is column 3, is number 3, 4, and 5. Meaning, it's stuff that was learnt out from the psukim by droshas. It's stuff that was created by gezeiros and takanos. That's the majority of what we do in halacha today. But when we're doing mitzvahs, number 2 is a small category, halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There aren't that many things. Number 1 is significant. Meaning, when we sit in a sukkah and we know that it has to be this big and this wide and this and this and this, that's coming already from number 1, from Sinai. In proportions, I don't know to put exact percentages on it. Number 2 is very small, I know that. Number 3, 4, and 5 is very big. And number 1 is significant. Yes, Ilana.
What would 1 and 2 be on this chart?
Well, 1 and 2 isn't. 2 is not on this chart because, by definition, 2 doesn't have any connection with the posuk. We'll see that next time. But 1 would be, like we're seeing here, like an esrog. I know an esrog from Sinai, but I still want to connect it with the posuk. Even with Greek, which is weird.
So
the halacha will be number 1. I just had a mind block, yes.
I don't understand what the point is.
Oh, what's the point? So what do you think? Why are we even interested in doing this? If it's a drabbonon, so the halacha stands on its own because the rabbis have the authority to create it, so why do I need to connect it with the posuk? And if it's from Sinai, so why do I need to connect it with the posuk? It's all fine. So what am I doing this for? Yeah.
If it's more of like a basis and a legitimacy to whatever halacha, like, when rabbis make takana, like, people think in general, like, oh, it's the takana from the rabbis, like, there's no legitimacy, people are just making this up. If they, like, find actual proof in the text itself, it gives it more like a bolster.
It gives it a bolster, it gives it more rooted legitimacy in Torah Misinai, because the text, the written text for sure is Sinai based. Also, the ritva, at the end, we're going to see the ritva in number 8 in a second, is going to say that the psukim contain, at least in potential, the ability for you to do this. Let's look at number 6 for a second. I like number 6. It's one of my favorites. And it actually throws up some interesting questions. The Hatanya, doesn't it say in a bright, Letotafot, what's going on here?
Three times,
but the first 2 times it's written as if it was Totechet. You got that? How many different ways could I write the word Totafot in Hebrew? How many different variations are there?
Well, here there's only 2.
Yeah, but you tell me how many there are logically.
3.
No.
Above, okay.
So I could write
above, yeah.
Like that. Okay. Or
with above in between the tuf and above.
Oh,
and that tuf.
With
now
above
or
in between the
now
also
in between the say and the tuf.
Right.
And now,
or
now with the in between the fe and the tuf, but not in between fiyah and
anything else?
And
that's it. There are 4 ways I can write Totafot. Now, what does Totafot even mean? It's referring to the tefillin. It says they have to be Totafot feinei nefa. Totafot. Now, what does Totafot mean? Not clear. But one way or the other, I mean, it's clear to us from Sinai we know what it means, but the word itself is not obviously a word that we understand. We could write it all these different ways. It appears, according to the Gemara, in different ways in these 2 psukim. Look very carefully, girls. Look in number 6. For Hatanya, it says, first of all, the Totafot. In Shmot, it's written without any vavs. In Devarim, vav, it's written without any vavs. And in Devarim, Yudalev, it's written with 2 vavs. Okay? Now, according to the Gemara, therefore, the first one looks singular, the second one looks singular, the third one looks plural. That's 1 plus 1 plus 2 equals 4. Harikan, Arba, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So how do I know there are 4 parashas in this tefillin? Because it says, Totefet, Totefet, Totafot. Beautiful, 1 plus 1 plus 2 is 4. Now let me ask you a question, girls. How do I, inside the tefillin are 4 different parashas. four-part compounds or four parshas on one cloud. How do I actually know that there are four parshas in the tefillin? It's a peirush hamakubal. That's what tefillin are. We know that. We know that already. So what am I doing this for? And look at Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva then says, "Ein l'tzarich, I don't need this because tot, the word tot, bekafti in Coptic is shtayim, means shtayim, and pot or pat in Afriki, what's Afriki? In African is shtayim. So tot and fot are 2 plus 2 in weird African languages, and therefore I know tot and fot makes 4. Now what is going on? What's going on? Why am I learning halacha like this? And the answer is I'm not.
It's a remez.
It's not meant to be the way that we learn this halacha. So don't get upset when you see something about this and you think, is that how Judaism works? No. When you're actually in column number 3, when you're learning it out logically, logic is logic and it works very, you know, rationally in many ways. I think drash is complicated, you have to get into how it works. But what we're doing here is not drash, it's asmachta. Very important difference. And therefore that's why I'm talking about African languages, freaky this and that, freaky that, and all that's all a bit freaky. Like what's going on, that's how it works. By the way, did you see my footnote? Did you look at my footnote? Do you ever look at my footnotes? Do I waste my time putting footnotes on the sheets? I like footnotes, I only discovered how to do them fairly recently. Okay, I just feel very pleased with myself. So I put these footnotes on, and I actually raised something, which is that actually, if you look in the Chumash, these Tatefe, Tatafot isn't actually written that way in the Chumash. Did you get what I just said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That the actual words don't actually say what the Gemara says they are. They don't have the same vavs in them. That means that the whole Drasha actually doesn't work the way the Chumash is now anyway. So how did that happen? Is that a problem? Is that something I should be worried about? Is that something I should be concerned about? You know the famous drasha of Rashi? He brings it down about tzitzit. Where is 613?
So the matra, and then you pick a string and not
after. So how does it work, girls?
Because it doesn't have a within.
Ah, so good. So 90, 10, 400 equals 600 plus 8 strings plus 5 knots equals. Beautiful. Except the word tzitzit in the Torah when Rashi is talking about it is not written in 3 years.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
It doesn't matter.
You're right. Why it doesn't matter, we'll come to.
Why doesn't it matter? Other times when it does have something, it isn't
working. Right. So we'll have to talk about that. But just in case you think you'll discover something, if you look at Tatafot, don't worry, we know all about that. Exactly how that happened, we will discuss when we talk about how the Chumash that we use today, the Mikras Gedolos, ended up being the Chumash that it is, and why sometimes when you look in Chazal, they seem to have very slightly different versions of the Psukim, usually when it comes to the Vavs, okay, but sometimes in other areas as well. So don't worry about that, we'll deal with it when we deal with it. Okay, so the Rambam, just going back to the Rambam just for a second, go back to number 4, and we'll finish off number 4. Ladies, go back to number 4. So he says, Aval im hayosim ukvalim ve'ein machloikis behem. If there's no machloikis, and they know from Sinai, mechachmas mikra hanosan, she'ev shalohaiti mimenu eilu perushim ba'ofanim min hakeshim. You can nevertheless derive from the chachmas hamikra, from the psukim themselves, you can derive these things through asmachtas. Vasmachim, varamazim, hints, smach, the horizon and mitzvahs because of kashitirim, but Talmud noisim and noisim and nechlekim b'marechet ayin. Because that's why you sometimes find, even with perushim that are given on Sinai, that the rabbis go backwards and forwards trying to prove them from a pasuk with Greek and with this and with that. And he brings the example of priyetz hadar. And look at my underlined words. Ein zeh. I mean number 4 here. Ein zeh mipnei shadava mesupik etzlam. It's not because they weren't sure what to use. It's not that they turned up one day and they said, "Oi, what shall we shake for the Arab minion? Should we shake a kiwi or shall we shake an esrog? Oh, let's prove it from the pasuk." No, he says. Elarainu b'loy safik mi Yeshua ad eleinu. We know from Yeshua to us. Shehah esrog haya nitalim alula b'kol shana. They knew every year what an esrog was. They weren't trying to work it out. They're not trying to debate this. And they're just trying to find a connector with the pasuk for the thing they already knew. and he brings other examples, etc., etc. The other underlined words, Kalaima Shahadvarim Ashetira Oisan Moitsiim Oisan Bechlal Oprat, they bring them out using these methodologies. So sometimes we learn things in Pasukim which we already knew, but we're learning it back in. Yes. It's actually called eisegesis. You know the word exegesis? What does exegesis mean? What does ex mean? Out of. External. Yeah? Exegesis means when you learn something out of a pasuk. That's what we call drasha. Eisegesis, which is a funny word, okay, means when you're learning it in, meaning I already know the rules, I want to read it in. What are you doing? Normally we're learning out, but sometimes we're learning in. Even when we're learning out, we have to ask, what are we doing? When you read a pasuk, are you trying to, when you want to know, what does it mean? What does that mean? What does it mean? Does it mean, what does it, what did God mean? Does it mean, what do you think it means? That's a very interesting question. Is the meaning of a text what the original author intended it to mean, or is it what you understand it to mean? You understand what I'm asking? In any text, lahavdil, even in a secular text, we'll talk about that when we talk about that. Let's look at this last point and then let you go. Khani, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Let's look at number 8, which is the last. Look at 7 briefly, which is the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvah. The Rambam says, "Sheyesh sham dinim, hein perushim ukubalim imosha." There are dinim which receive from Moshe, a machlokes mehem, aval hein meviim raya alehim ba'achas mishloshes remidas. They sometimes can bring, use one of the rules of derivation to bring a proof. Ki michach masakosav shehu esher mitzvin bo remes. Again, it's a remes, moira ala peiros, etc. Now, what did the Ritzvah say in number 8? The Ritzvah is an interesting peirush. Let's just finish with the Ritzvah, which is as follows. The Ritzvah says that actually all of these Perushim, he's really talking about the Drabonons in number 4 and 5. But when the rabbis make a halacha, and they create a halacha through their own authority, they don't need to learn it from a pasuk. They create a new halacha of, let's say, for example, I don't know what, Chanukah. They create a halacha of Chanukah. Chanukah is not in the Torah. But they still find a connector with the pasuk. Says the Ritzvah, that's because that connector is already there. It's just left, if you like, open to the rabbis to find it. Look at this Ritzvah. This is a really important Ritzvah. And we'll finish with this, and we'll go upstairs and do our Torah for the room. Number 8. Hadika Amar, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Amar Lefana Machuish Zichronis V'Shoifres. How appropriate is this for Rosh Hashanah? Okay? 3 days from now. Rosh Hashanah, 2 days from now. Thursday. We blow shofar in the morning. So it says, there's a rabbinic rule to blow Malchuyos, for Pesukim for Malchios and Zichronis and Shofros. Vishum da'afa gav the Pesukim Malchios Zichronis for Shofros Einum min ha-Torah. Even though there's no, that's not in the Torah, this is rabbinic. Elamid Rabbonon, but it's rabbinic for Rosh Hashanah. Because Makam Mimasha Amru Torah is Zichron Trua. It says in the Torah of Rosh Hashanah it's called Zichron Trua. Yesh Lilmoid Sheroi Lahatki Pesukim Trua Pesukim Zichron. Meaning, everyone agrees that the halacha of these shofar blasts in shofar itself is doraisa, but connecting it with malchuyos shofars and zichronis is rabbonon. But they connected it with the pasuk zichron truah. Umihacham on the third line, read with me. Vahachas samchu rabbonon itikune hane psuke detkiyasa. Fine, and that's where they got it from. Umishum hachik katani Rabbi Kiva shama kodesh baruch hu. That's why Rabbi Kiva says God says keilu amru lefanim malchuyos zichronis v'shofar. Say in front of me. Malchuyos and Zichronos. And here's the underlined words. Shekol ma sheyesh lo asmachta min haposek. Whenever we're dealing with an asmachta, even when I'm reading it in, not learning it out, Heira Kodesh Baruch Hu, God's really telling us, Sheroi lasos kein, that this is a suitable thing to do, Ela sheloi kavu chayva, but he didn't make it obligatory, Umasu l'chachamur, he allowed the rabbis to discover it later. The Ritzvah's understanding, and by the way, I'm not sure the Rambam would agree with this exactly, but the Ritzvah is saying a very interesting thing. When the rabbis read into a pasuk, let's draw this up again, halachas, read it into a pasuk afterwards, when the rabbis read in, it was already coded there in the pasuk, it was just left there almost as a reshus, meaning the Doraisas, God's saying, you must find it in the Pesukim. The Drabonons, he's saying, are there if you want, but it's up to you. You have the right to create this halacha chazal if you want to. If you don't want to, that's fine. But you should know it's all there, if you like, as a options there in Pesach. Rezed Avah Borah Emes. And he says, and he rejects the view that Asmachtas is just like a remez, just like a random connector. He says, no, it's not random. He's actually getting at the Rambam a little bit. In fact, he's actually quite strong. I don't know if you picked up on this. He says, Loi kedibri hamaforshim has machta shehu kederech siman. Not like those people who said the asnachtas are just a, almost like a random connector. Shenitnu chachamim v'loi shekavonas atar lekach. Chas v'shalom, he says. Yishtaka hadava. That should not be said. Lo yoima shezeu das minus. This is heretical. This is actually the Rambam's view, which he doesn't like. But that's fine, because we don't need to get into all of that now. But the point is that asmachta, this one to the Ritva, is a very deep thing. It's not just we're reading random things into the psukim, tot and fot and Greek words for hydro and all that. He says, these things are there, the rabbis bring them out when they need to bring them out, and if they don't, they don't. So I think we've covered, it's not so complicated, we've covered hopefully all we need to say about the first category of the Perushim HaMukubalim. Hopefully you understand a lot more about how Asmachta and Drosha work as well. We will, the next session will be on Sunday. It'll be Tzom Gedalia, so you might be a bit tired, but you'll be okay. Because you won't be too hungry by 11 o'clock in the morning. Okay, that's a different problem. Okay, so I wish you all a Shana Tova. I'll see you, please God, before Rosh Hashanah, because I'll be here with you on Wednesday afternoon. Okay. It's my pleasure.